Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. From the competitive scribbling of after-dinner Pictionary to the endurance test that is a family game of Monopoly, board games often reveal a great deal about the players.
Sorry.
Bye.
Go with you.
Sorry.
Sorry.
It's the game
Bye.
Of
sorry.
First you're way ahead, then you get bumped
sorry.
Way back. So shake a leg, and you'll get home first. The game of sorry.
Classic board games like Sorry, Risk, or Clue are remembered with a kind of genteel nostalgia. Well, not so fast. Leon Nafok writes for the idea section of the Boston Globe and reported on what enthusiasts are calling a renaissance in board games, fueled largely by devotees of so-called German-style designer board games. And Leon, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia.
Distinguish for us, please, the difference between the German-style game and, you know, the ones we know, the Monopoly, Risk, Scrabble.
Right. So German-style games are more strategic. There's less left up to chance. You don't just roll a die and move around a board. And there's not just one way to win. They often sort of revolve around a kind of clever, what's called a game mechanic. So, for instance, one of the more popular games from recent years is a game called Forbidden Island, where players aren't actually playing against each other, but they're playing on a team together. And so the real kind of distinction between German-style games and sort of what you and I are probably used to is that these things are kind of more innovative on a structural level.
You note that there is a documentary film now out about board games. There are university courses, huge gatherings of enthusiasts. So when did the U.S. start to develop this subculture of German-style enthusiasts?
It was really in the mid-90s when American gamers started paying attention to these board games. It was thanks largely to Settlers of Catan, which was imported in 1995. And it was, you know, thanks to the Internet, which allowed for people to kind of trade games and find out about games they hadn't heard of and start actually importing them from Germany and actually translating them into English and then meeting up, you know, and sharing them with each other. And that was sort of what gave rise to this, you know, pretty vibrant subculture, which has now grown pretty significantly.
And I guess you're in an epicenter there in Cambridge.
Yeah, that's sort of what I kind of found out when I was reporting the story is that, you know, we have a couple of stores in the Boston area. One is the Games People Play in Harvard Square, which turns out to be the first store in America that actually imported German games into the U.S.
Is there a profile for the new board game player or designer?
A profile? So, you know, it's a pretty nerdy activity. You know, I think a lot of people who play board games on this level are, you know, maybe there are people who also played Magic the Gathering when they were younger or still do. You know, some of these board games are sci-fi oriented. But I think in general, like the one wonderful thing about them is that they're actually they have pretty general appeal. Mm-hmm. They're relatively simple. Like most of the best ones have, you know, rules that are easy to learn and they can be played by anyone.
You spent time with two young game designers. Their newest creation is called Cosmic Pizza. So maybe describe it for us so we'll get an idea of how different these games are.
Yeah, so Cosmic Pizza is a pretty special game. It's you play as a pizza delivery guy flying through space delivering pizzas to different planets. And the way it works is you pull cards that sort of give you ways to move around the board. So, like, you might pull a card that says, you know, move two spaces up and three spaces over, or one space down and two spaces diagonally. And so you accumulate these cards, and during your turns, you kind of put them together in ways that get you from one place to another. And so you're kind of flying around from one place to another, delivering pizzas. You know, you're avoiding asteroids that can knock you off course, and you're collecting tips every time you deliver a pizza.
There are other games that are designed around really kind of bizarre but very clever on some level concepts. Tulip Mania is one, Chicken Caesar. Tell us a little bit about these.
Yeah, I mean, the wonderful thing about some of these games is that they are really themed around extremely esoteric and specific things. Like you mentioned, Tulip Mania 1637 is about, you know, the tulip craze that swept Holland 400 years ago. It's an auction-based game, and so you're sort of playing in a, you know, in an economic bubble. There's another game called Power Grid that's pretty popular right now, which puts you in the shoes of like a company building an electrical infrastructure for a network of cities.
Did you try any of these, Leon?
Yeah, so I played Dominion, which is a deck-building game that has been very, very successful. over the last couple of years.
Deck building?
Yeah. So deck building means that you have cards that you draw, and they represent resources and money and different actions that you can take, and you kind of have them in your possession, and you choose how to deploy them as you go. It's sort of a game where every player on the table kind of has their own deck, and your object in a way is to build the best deck possible.
Do you have fun? I mean, did it hold your interest?
Totally. I mean, you know, it was a little bit rough going at the beginning because the rules are actually kind of deceptively complex. You know, I watched a couple YouTube videos that sort of showed the game in action, and after that, I was kind of off to the races. Like, it was me and three other people who were playing it together. None of us had played before, and within, I would say, like an hour, we were kind of really into it and didn't want to stop. So it was really fun.
Leon Nafok wrote about a renaissance in board games for the Boston Globe Ideas section. How are designers considering the needs of today's audience? I mean, shorter attention spans, being used to video games, maybe. How are they accounting for this?
Well, so one thing I'll say about these games is that they don't take a whole lot of time to play through. You know, you mentioned Monopoly and Risk earlier. Those are games that are notoriously laborious. You have to sit there for hours and hours until it's over, and by the end, no one's having fun. So a lot of these games, they're really supposed to take 45 minutes to an hour. So that's one thing. You know, in terms of how they stack up against video games, I think that they kind of appeal to a different kind of fun, right? They encourage people sitting around a table together. They encourage a sort of interaction between players. And I think one thing that the designers of these games are really focused on is kind of inventing new ways for people to interact with each other, which is something you're getting with video games too now, like with a lot of these dance games and these music games. But, you know, with a board game, there's sort of the sense that you're opening up a box and you are kind of activating this world that's living in this box.
How about, is there an argument then that, you know, the more interactive playing makes these board games better for kids than, say, video games?
Yeah, there definitely is that point of view that, like, some of these games, you know, encourage certain kinds of strategic thinking that maybe some video games don't as much. You know, and certainly some of these games encourage you kind of to feel like you have control over what happens to you. You know, mm-hmm. so unlike with Sorry or some of these other, you know, older games that are really about rolling a die and seeing what happens, these games kind of reinforce this idea that you can strategize and you can decide what to do, and it actually matters.
Video games, of course, multi-billion-dollar industry. And the highest-selling board game was Monopoly in 1936 and is still Monopoly. So do any of these new games even stand a chance into breaking into that spotlight?
I think at this point, you know, 15 years after sort of the first German-style board game came to the U.S., we are starting to see kind of new classics emerge. So, like, Settlers of Catan is definitely, you know, the big kahuna of all this. That's a game you can find at Walmart at this point. You know, there are other games kind of that are starting to be in that pantheon, like Ticket to Ride is one that's very popular. Dominion is pretty popular. But, you know, that said, we're really not talking about any kind of, you know, numbers, anything close to what Monopoly does or Risk.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, the people who make these games, they're hopeful.
Thanks for sharing with us and playing for just a little bit.
Of course.
Leon Nafok, a freelance reporter who wrote about the board game renaissance for the Boston Globe. You'll find links to his article and more on some of the games that he mentioned at our website. You can pass go at wordofmouthradio.org. Now coming up, playing is a path to productivity at the Googleplex in Silicon Valley. So is good eating. That's when Word of Mouth continues in just a minute.